Hey guys, real quick. Did you know that Sylvester Stallone was supposed to be the lead actor in Beverly Hills Cop, but he didn't like the humor of the script? He actually ended up rewriting parts of it, but the studio didn't like his version of the script, and so they cast Eddie Murphy instead. And speaking of even more cool things, did you guys know that we have a Patreon? That's right. You can find it at the bottom of the episode descriptions with all of the other links, such as all of our social medias and our website. We would love you forever if you guys wanted to support us on that Patreon, where we update our notes regularly and will begin to showcase a lot of special content that can only be found on the Patreon. Otherwise, I really hope you guys enjoy this episode. Anyway, hi everybody. Welcome to I'm so excited. Holy shit. I literally only wrote one thing for my intro, and it's like I would honestly argue that this actually might be the quintessential high school movie. Like, this felt more to me like I was watching clips from me being in high school than Clueless or Bring It On or American Pie or even fucking Accepted and Superbad.
It is surprisingly holds up too, because like they were going over the clicks at the very beginning too. And I'm like, okay, you slightly modify these and like, okay, for instance, the coffee kids, they're just hipsters. Yep.
They're just hipsters.
That's all it is. Like it just translates.
Also Andrew's here. Hi, Andrew.
Yes, hello, this everyone. This movie is amazing, and it has a very like, you know, next decade John Hughes thing going for it. It does a little bit of what Sex Education does on Netflix, where it creates this school environment that is like both really relatable and feels real, and also is not at all.
Yeah, I was going to say
ridiculous. Mean Girls will steal from this movie functionally, but the overview of the tropes is critical for all like real good like coming of age teen movies.
The biggest 90s issue that this had that I immediately picked out was
the, is it the only hard R?
One. No. The only one real who quick. Looks the correct age is JGL. He's everyone
no,
else looks like an adult.
No, because Larissa Olenek looks the age.
I mean, I guess. Oh, and fun fact, JGL was dating Julia Stiles at one
yes,
point.
Yes, he was.
I can't hear this yet. I need to get it. I'm like, no, wait. Hold on to all of this. Welcome back to Behind the Timeline. Please like, share, and subscribe. We're going to talk about 10 Things I Hate About You. We are entering 1999, so we're super excited about this. I love this year, so I'm really excited to talk about 1999, and I'm excited for this movie. And shout out to Ben, who is a friend of the show and who requested this ages ago, but because it is such an awesomely quintessential movie of 1999, we didn't do the request when it was made, and we held on to it and kept it in the timeline where it belongs. So we're finally here. So shout out to Ben. We are back. Yep.
For those of you who enjoy as much as I do the Request the Timeline intro, I'm sorry that you didn't get one on this episode, because this is part of the timeline, but it will be back. Don't worry. Yeah. I love that intro.
But yeah. And Andrew's here with us, who's been on a few episodes before, because this is a favorite, right? This is like your jam, Andrew.
Yeah. So tell me about this, Andrew. Why? Like, this is, I never would have pegged this as a movie for you, dude.
I have many things going on right now, because I actually, until you said the name Ben, thought that this was my request. I didn't know.
Maybe it's multiple people's.
It probably was multiple, dude.
Yeah, I didn't know that. That this wasn't mine. I'm actually kind of shocked. So this was huge for me, actually. I got put onto this by my cousin, who was a little older than me, because in 1999 I was a wee child.
Just a wee lass. I am a
91 baby. So I actually didn't get put onto this until a few years after it was released, and it was already on video. VHS. I think it was actually VHS. I think I was 12 or 13, And I remember the perfect first time I watched this, I actually related so much to Cameron. Yeah. Because I had actually just gone to a new school. I was in a brand new private school. It was not a good environment. And I watched this and I was just like, wow, I related so much to him. Watching this in my later life, I definitely find myself relating to him less, but I really enjoy this movie. I've watched it probably 100+ times. I'm not even kidding, over the years. It used to be a movie that I would just put on to have as background noise. It's
love that for you.
Honestly, same. And there was like, it was eerie how much of the audio in this affected me the same as watching like a Disney movie I haven't seen in 20 years, right? Where it's like it like lights up all those parts of your brains. Like you immediately remember like how it sounds and what the, and it was, I was like, oh my God, I could like recite this. I didn't realize how many times I've seen this movie until watching it now.
It is so unbelievably quotable as a movie.
Oh, it's like, so is, dude.
So many lines that are just perfect. I mean, like, even this many years on, they're just hilarious. Like, I mean, I cannot tell you how many times that when I was living with my friends, anybody knocked on the door, rang the door, oh, that must be Nigel with the brie. And I go and I get the door.
Same. And I was like 12 when this came out, right? So I have like a few years on you. And like, I saw this, I think, in theaters. And like, yeah, we were all saying that.
Dude. It's so good. But yeah, this was quintessential for my teenage years. I love this movie. I'm so happy to be on.
Dude.
Thank you guys for having me.
You're so welcome, dude. And thank you for reminding me. Like, I've seen this movie. Definitely have not watched as much as you guys have, but I wish I had now, because watching this again, number one, I forgot how fucking real the adults are in this movie, especially the way that Walter talks to Kat. PMS does not cover, or my insurance does not cover PMS, was like the funniest dad thing I've ever heard in my life.
I have lots of things to say in the episode about all of this.
He Good. Is such a dad.
Is such a dad.
What's really funny is the other thing is he reminds me so much of my dad for one, in like an eerie way, because not only did my dad actually go to UW, like my dad is an actual Husky.
That's hilarious.
Like, he's the same, like he works in finance, so he's not a doctor, but like, you know, I didn't grow up with him, so I didn't exactly have a close relationship with him, but he has that same like awkward energy that he has. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, it was really funny how many times I was listening to the dad just being like, dude, this reminds me.
You close your eyes, it's just your dad.
And there was the moment too where I think my favorite line of his was when he's going through the list of things they're not allowed to do, and he's like, and no ritual animal sacrifices. I'm giving them ideas. And then he like just runs off. He is such a good – that was the thing about this movie. So many fantastic supporting characters.
Yeah.
Like, incredible.
Well, here, I'll get into the names part, because this is the part Lindsay doesn't like.
Yeah, please don't put me through this. This is
I like, won't. There's a lot. Yeah, and I wanted to make sure I gave, like, the majority of the people their dues. So, directed by Gil Younger, the film was written by Karen McCullough and Kristen Smith, who we will see again in 2001 for Legally Blonde as writers. And then they'll also come back in 2008 for The House Bunny, which I feel like we were just talking about a while ago.
I also just low-key love that it's written by two women.
Yeah, it was pretty rad. It's
like not that common, especially for comedies.
Well, especially in the 90s either.
I mean,
for Gil not to be involved in it.
Comedy, like women in comedy is like a tough glass ceiling. Like that's a whole other conversation, but this is cool.
And the thing about this too is the writing is what holds this movie.
Yep.
Yeah, 100% all day.
Is so like, and that's nothing
and
to
the
say
sexual chemistry, acting. But we'll get there. No, like, I'm like, and the raw chemistry between all the couples, but
it's true.
It's like, it's not even the, like, and I don't want to say anything against the acting, because I do think the acting was great, but it's the dialogue, it's the writing that just is what makes this movie slap. Like, if it didn't have the quips and quotes and, like, the dynamic between the characters via the writing, as well as their chemistry, of course, but, like, it genuinely, that was the thing that I wrote this in my notes probably, like, 10 times, just how much the writing carries this movie. And not only that, but the soundtrack. Holy crap, my God, the soundtrack. Okay. Slapped.
So hold on, pause it, because I do have a section solely for the soundtrack right after I get into all these things. So the film stars a shitload of people, and it has three major breakout roles. This was the explosive rise of Julia Stiles as Kat Stratford, Heath Ledger as Patrick Verona, and Joseph Gordon-Levitt as Cameron James. The film co-stars Larissa Olenek as Bianca Stratford, the younger sister, who we saw 4 years ago as Dawn Reed Schaefer from The Babysitter's Club. She is the girl who has diabetes.
Stop everything. She's fucking the secret world of Alex Mack. How dare you?
No, I know that. I'm just saying.
Else. No, her name is Alex Mack.
Okay.
End the fuck off. That is who she is forever. I mean, like, oh my God. I can't believe that wasn't your... But go on, please.
She's spitting facts here. I'm not going to lie, my guy.
Yeah, whatever.
So fucking for real.
My bad. Okay.
I was so hyped when this came out and it was the secret world of Alex Mack was starring in it. We were losing our mind. She was the famous one, not Julia Stiles, as you said. Like, she was more famous than Julia Stiles in my world. When this I was 12, I was like, Alex Mack is in this movie, Mom. We have to go. And we did.
Of course you did. Well, here, I'll redeem myself with the next two then. Larry Miller as Walter Stratford, who we'll see again in 2001's Princess Diaries as Paolo Puttanesca, the hairdresser. Respect. And Allison Janney as Miss Perky, because who the fuck does not love and know C.J. Craig, the all-powerful, ever-witty Bartlett administration's White House press secretary?
And also so much else. Like, genuinely, Allison Janney is my fucking reason for living. Dude, I love that woman.
The first time you meet her in this movie is...
She's my old person crush. Like, if I could fuck an old person, it would probably be Allison Janney. Or also
absolutely credit. Mick Jagger. Absolutely credit. That is a good choice.
That is a great choice.
Wait. Shout out to Matt. You know who you really want, though, if you're going to fuck an old person? What's her name from True Detective this year? And she was in Silence of the Lambs. What's her name?
Jodie Foster.
Jodie Foster kept it tight. But all right, go on. I'm just saying. If I had...
Ridiculous.
I fucking love Allison Janney. I was like, I forgot she was in this. Like, all right, but go on. I want to actually stop us from we have like a timeline to cover and everything before we get
into one other cast member I want to shout out is, of course, Gabrielle Union, who is in so many things and was a massive crush of mine in the early thousands.
Yeah.
Funny enough, not after this movie, though, after a garbage B movie called Cradle to the Grave with DMX and Jet Li.
I remember that.
I loved those movies back in the day, and she was so fine in that movie. And she was my crush for so long after that. And to this day, she is a beautiful woman and absolutely one. She's beautiful.
And she's like still working, right? Like, she's like,
I was going to say, she's still doing stuff. I'm pretty sure she was in Bad Boys 2.
No, she was actually, if I remember correctly.
She's Martin Lawrence's sister.
But she had I think it ended in 2019, but she had a really long run on a pretty well-rated show on BET from like 2013 to 2019, if I remember correctly.
I remember, dude, she's been in everything. So like, even with Gabrielle Union, we'll see her again in about two or three years with Bring It On. Yeah.
Bring It On. I love Bring It On. I used to know all of the moves.
Like, wow. Like, totally freaked me out. I mean, right on.
Sora, number one. Okay, stop. Oh my God.
School has no gymnastics team. This was a last resort.
Sorry. Oh God, don't even get me started on Eliza Dushku.
Like, I love Eliza Dushku.
Let's
move on, because Andrew brought up the music, so I have to mention the music.
No, let's go over the music. We'll do the plot. We'll do the timeline. We'll actually talk about this movie.
Yes, promise. Maybe. So yeah, like Andrew said, like, holy shit, this soundtrack is like the top tier of '90s, like late '90s, early 2000s. Like, the fact that this movie starts off with Bare Naked Ladies 1 week was, I was like, oh, we're fucking set, because I forgot. First of all, the animation for the intro is stupendous. Love it. I love the way that everything looks for the credits. But then for us to flawlessly fade into Joan Jett and the Blackhearts' bad reputation with fucking Kat sitting in the beater next to these party girls.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, what a way to intro someone.
And it's such a good opening scene, because the music goes from like non-diegetic to diegetic.
Mm-hmm.
Right, you're hearing it like outside, like it's the soundtrack, and then you zone in and it's what's playing on their cars, and that's what Guardians of the Galaxy does, and it's very good. So
I've actually never seen this fail. Now that I'm thinking about it, I've never seen the intro as a radio fail.
It doesn't.
Out of a movie that we've covered. Yeah.
It's just that fade from the non-diegetic to the diegetic music. Like, that's what makes it. I'm so into that as a, like, director's choice.
And if you like angry chick rock, then this movie is, like, perfect for you. Because the big players in this movie, and again, shout out to them, because a lot of people, I think, would not be aware of them, but will have heard their music, is Letters to Cleo.
Letters to Cleo.
Every time you see the band in this movie, that is that band, Letters to Cleo. Yep. They make some of the best bangers in this movie. And not only that, but this movie put me onto Biggie because of Hypnotize.
Really?
Yeah, no, Hypnotize. Party, yeah. Dancing on the table.
Because you were so young, because you didn't otherwise have Biggie in your life.
No, because I was a baby. I literally, like, and I was grew up in the most, like, punk-centered area. Like, everything I was listening to was rock. And then I'm here Hypnotize and friggin' Cat is dancing on the table. I'm feeling things I never felt before.
This is amazing. Oh, yeah, you and me both, dude. Like, I swear to God. But no, Letters to Cleo, like, trust me that I did like some angry chick rock in 1999. And, like, yeah, fuck yeah. I was super here. I believe that I had that album, like, that. And I had the soundtrack for this too.
Letters to Cleo is the band. If you haven't seen this in a while, or you're not sure or whatever, their mainstay in the movie is they are the outro singers for I Want You to Want Me. So they are the closeout song.
Yeah, but they play at the concert.
No, but they are playing at the show.
They show up at prom. Like, they're all over the movie. They're like their Cat's favorite band. Anyway, let's get into this. All right. The plot.
The timeline.
The plot.
Fuck.
No, the plot.
I don't know what we're doing here.
Jesus Christ. You'd think that we'd never done this before.
We'd think so. Go ahead.
So I know that you're not going to edit that, but just in case. All right, on to the plot. The
I'm so going to now.
No, please do. Now you have to. All right. New kid in school, Cameron, is immediately in love with walking unattainable princess trope Bianca. Tragically, Bianca is the child of 1980s paranoia and isn't allowed to date until her older sister does. But plot twist, Kat hates everyone and everything, so no risk of Bianca dating, right? Enter bad boy Heath Ledger and an elaborate scheme to get Kat a boyfriend.
It's true. I'll tell you something that's even more, like, phenomenal to me than, especially coming off The Matrix last week, which, by the way, I didn't mention this at the beginning of the episode, guys, but we are changing the release date, so you will have new episodes every Friday, because we normally record on Sundays or Mondays, and I usually have to rush to record, to edit stuff, so I want to give myself a little bit more time. So you guys will have The Matrix, and then Fridays, and by the time this goes out, so yeah. But where you can stream this, yeah, a week ago. I don't know why I even brought it up that way, but here we are.
This was wild. So you so it streams on Disney Plus. Is that because it was a Fox property?
Yes, 100% why.
Bingo. All right, cool.
Now let's go to the timeline. I know what we're doing here. I know what we're about.
It's $19.99. All right. So I have been talking about the year of our Lord 1999 for.
No, you have been talking about Kid Rock for the duration of this podcast.
And I will mention Kid Rock today in this moment. I've been waiting for this day. I loved 1999. I loved everything about 1999. It was a good. I love it. There's so much cool stuff that was in 99. So we have lots of things to cover and we'll have lots and lots of fun facts. But truly, like, this was a big year and a lot of the stuff we remember happened in this year, right? And, like, everything from the groundbreaking with Napster's release to the indelible in the Columbine Massacre, which was in 99, to the unstoppable when Kid Rock performed Ba Wada Ba backed by a full choir at the MTV Video Music Awards. It all happened in 1999.
I'm fucking real.
But true, like, society shaping shit, right? Like, stuff that was just ridiculous, like Kid Rock. But then truly, like, I think I had the soundtrack to this movie via Napster.
I'm pretty sure I did, too. I'm
pretty sure I downloaded this from Napster. So it's like there's a lot that happened. And then, like I mentioned, Columbine. Like, that shaped everything about like the world we live in today, right? It's like, so there's like a lot of shit that the group of people who are like the demographic of this podcast will have lived through.
Here, you want to get hot real quick, dude. Let's talk about fucking Rotten Tomatoes. Yeah, because I don't understand this. 71% on the tomato meter and 69% audience score. I truly, I don't get it. Genuinely, I really don't. That's so low, dude.
I do. Because by the time that this movie... Okay, so think of it this way. By the time that Rotten Tomatoes became a thing that people regularly used and was aware of, I don't know that year, but I can tell you it wasn't 1999. And by the time that this was in the cultural zeitgeist, it was too late.
Yeah, we've talked about the effect before on some of the old movies of like who scored this, like where does this come from? But I find that like generally the IMDb has been like pretty reasonable. Like it's felt accurate to like what, like even looking through stuff that's old, because we've definitely had that question before. But we found it to be pretty reliable through like the 80s when we started doing it. But this is fucking weird. Like genuinely fuck everyone involved in this result. Like where whoever voted on it, they're I'm sorry, but you're wrong. Like you just don't know how to have a good time. That's what I say to the people who gave this a bad score. It's like, can you just fucking relax? Like, I'm not going to say a goddamn thing about like the themes of the, I don't have anything analytical or intelligent to say about this movie. I have a lot of,
you don't need to,
a lot of that's feelings, not this kind of movie. That's not what I'm here for. Okay. Everybody just like, these people just do not know how to have a good time. That's what I think about this Rotten Tomato. Yeah.
Well, and that's, I think that's also indicative of like the things that won going into the next section here, but I think that's indicative of like what won the Oscars and like what got the nods and shit. This wasn't even looked at, by the way, guys. So we're not even going to mention that.
We'll say both of them. So like Shakespeare in Love wins in 99, which we've been talking about a lot in 1988 because it was made then and it won all the money, right?
In 1998.
Sorry, 98. It won all the money. But American Beauty is the movie from 1999, which made a fuck ton of money for like being like an adult rated R movie and wins the awards in 2000.
Speaking about adult rated R movies, shout out to Deadpool and Wolverine for breaking $1 billion and becoming the most profitable R rated film of all time.
Most excellent news.
Yes. I fucking called it, by the way.
For Emmys, The Practice is still holding strong for the drama category, but Ally McBeal wins for comedy. So that's the first win we've seen for Ally McBeal. Mm-hmm. TV continues to suck asshole is what's happening. So I enjoy keeping this Emmy category in here just to see how, like, you know, maybe I'll throw some other Emmy awards.
That's what we did on the Matrix.
In different categories. Like I'll put some different ones in.
I think on the Matrix we talked about Will and Grace a couple times.
Oh, what a great show. Yeah. But yeah, so we'll see how terrible TV is. When do you want to take a bet? Should we make a bet right now since this episode's already going to go wicked long? Should we bet when TV is going to get good? Like when are we going to see a TV award in the drama category that we're like, yeah, fire?
2002.
Why?
I don't know. I'm just saying that makes most sense. Okay,
we're not going to look at what came out. We're just going to
say. I'm going to say like 2002. I want to look it up.
I'm trying to think. Don't look it up. I'm trying to think like when did The Sopranos premiere? Or like I feel
that's what I'm saying. It was probably around that time. Yeah.
Yeah. That it starts to not suck. All right. I'm like, I would say 2000. Actually, I think you're right. Yeah. If I were to bet against you, I wouldn't. I actually think like that's about right. Andrew, do you have a guess?
So that depends. Are we talking about HBO or are we talking about normal TV?
Just any drama.
We're talking about a drama, a show winning best drama at the Emmys that isn't a pile of shit. Like the
Sopranos.
Yeah, see?
It's
yeah,
The Sopranos.
Right? It's
you're
The Sopranos? Right. Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I was going to say the only time that I think normal TV started getting decent, I don't think that started getting decent until the late thousands. Like, I can't think of normal TV that I think was like, in terms of drama, that was like really impactful until like, and even then it's debatable whether it's good.
Oh my
like
God, long. You guys.
Was I right?
I looked it up and we're not right. And we should be embarrassed and die of shame. And we don't have to edit this out because it is apropos of this movie. The West Wing.
Oh, fuck yes.
The West Wing. Allison Janney came onto our screens and transformed television. Actually, the Practice isn't horrible, to be fair.
2002 is going to hit. Yeah, I was going to say it's 2004 for Sopranos. My dad watched
it. Well, no, in terms of the year, you're actually pretty close. It's in 2000. It's the next year. The West Wing will win the award in 2001, 2002, and 2003. Sopranos wins in 2004, but then Lost wins in 2005. And then we regress and 24 wins in 2006. And then The Sopranos comes back and then Mad Men's on TV and Breaking. All right. Anyway.
Dude, we were killing it with our calls we're real here, close. But
top grossing movies. I'll take this one. Thank you very much. Love
all
you.
All yours. My
Star Wars Episode One: The Phantom Menace by just a fucking metric ton. Just don't why even mention what this movie made. But it was followed by The Sixth Sense and Toy Story 2, which again, guys, we are talking about massive movies in 1999. So like, you got to remember, we're going through the gauntlet of fucking goated movies this year.
Insane. I'm right below that was like American Beauty. Like there were like the 4 and 5 slots were nothing to snub at.
The nice thing about 10 Things I Hate About You was it only cost $13 million to make and made $53, $54 million back. But what I love that you put in here is that it didn't make quite as much as Lake Placid, which is one of my favorite creature features of all time.
It's one of the best movies of all time. Dude. Fuck you. Like,
Oliver Lake Platt Placid is my spirit animal in that movie.
No, because Lake Placid like stood on the shoulders of like Anaconda and they were and like Sharknado and just we're crushing it. Like that was the evolution of like the 80s horror movie like move. And anyway, we need to be on focus. But yeah, so, a lot of cool shit was happening in 1999 is what we're trying to say.
Yeah, so stay tuned, guys. Last thing I want to tell you guys about is because this is something most people don't know. There has never been a sequel to this movie, nor does there need to be. However, 10 years after this movie released, 2009, there was, that's ironic, by the way, there was a television reboot that lasted 20 episodes. And of the actors from the original film, only Larry Miller as Walter Stratford, the dad, is the only one that came back. Like everybody at that time was like, no, we're going to go do like greater shit. And Heath Ledger was dead by this time.
But like, I do think like, and actually let's get out of the timeline. Cause this takes us into our kind of first section here. I do think that, like, yes, the writing carries the movie, but they make some fun, like, directorial choices. Like, whose doesn't feel like that's an iconic moment when he's, like, dancing along the stairs and stuff? And, like,
oh, yeah. There's,
or, like, we talked about, like, the music in the beginning and the opening scene, like, is pretty great. Like, there's some fun, like, it's not very, like, it's not exactly, like, brave cinematography or anything, but, like, they do a good job with, like, the direction. I think he just like got lucky here and everything else was trash. And I also think like the writing elevates it, right? And
well, I definitely agree that he kind of like stumbled into greatness with this, because there are scenes where I'm like, that's a weird take. Like, why would you film that like visually? Like when they're trying to figure out how to find their backer, it's just like super close to Michael's face and JGL is in the back and you're like, why are we so zoomed in on this dude's face?
There's also some really poor editing in this. There's some jokes that don't fall because of the editing and it makes it look like the acting's the problem and it's not. It's the edit leaving to like, and I'm like, oh no, that's terrible. I was like, you shouldn't be able to see that. We almost never talk about problems with editing. We're not like, I'm like, I shouldn't be noticing that. Come on.
What
like,
I will say about the directing that I actually really did appreciate is there are a few times, and I suppose you could say this is writing, but there are a few times in this movie that they do really funny callbacks. Like, for instance, you have the PE teacher getting shot in the butt with the arrow. Then way later in the movie, you see him and he's the one doing detention and he goes to sit on his desk and he goes, because he goes to sit down and he's like, oh no, dude. And then he stands up and that's when he goes and terrorizes the rest of detention.
This is apropos of this section of like, they're very good with the setting. They're very good with like continuity in the school in its little ecosystem, right? So like, I really like this, and we mentioned this earlier, but like the trope of where they go through all the cliques and the school feels very lived in, and it feels very like the stakes are high at school, your whole world is school, and like a good high school movie will make you feel that way, right? So like Mean Girls does this, and like you said, Clueless, right?
Yeah, well, it started with Clueless when they're talking about like, you know, that's the guys that Elton hangs out with. They're the most popular boys in school, and you can't hang out with those guys unless you drive a BMW, and those are the burners over there and stuff like that.
There's always a group of burners, and they're always so funny.
This one, they don't really call them burners. This one, they're the fucking white Rastafarian guys. And the when it's Mr. Morgan yells at the two in the class, I was fucking dying.
Save your applause. I have a whole section on the staff.
I know. But the one thing I do, as far as like writing and the way that we're intro to a lot of people in this movie, something that I did really appreciate that most movies will overemphasize from this point forward or have in the past, no one really gives a shit that Cameron is a new kid at school. No one makes it a big thing that he's the new kid in town and would, you know, like, where are you from? California, you know, like in Hocus Pocus where they're like, when he moves to fucking.
I say this later, but I do not miss the bullying of the '80s and early nineties. Like
necessary in these movies. You're right, so dumb.
No one really bullies Cameron except for like the school bully who bullies everyone. Right.
Well, yeah, that's what
and
I
that's
mean.
Over but Bianca. Like, it's not about him being the new kid. Yeah. They don't bully him for being new. It's true. His being new is part of the setup for the Taming of the Shrew, which we sort of vaguely alluded to, this is based on the Shakespeare.
Is there a lot of Shakespeare call outs in this movie too?
No, and I really appreciate that they literally read Shakespeare later on directly calling to it. Mm-hmm. And I've seen so many remakes of Shakespeare movies where it's like, where it's literally not a remake, but like, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Right. Yeah, but I think this is the first one I saw. You know, that's obviously not Shakespeare, but I'm trying to make the point of a movie that remakes a classic story, right?
Yeah. Like, okay.
And the point is this is the first one I've seen where they directly call to the source material with Shakespeare.
Yeah, there's other examples of that. Like, I can't think of any off the top of my head, but I know that it's done in. It definitely in like Jane Austen adaptations and stuff. I think that they probably do it in Clueless.
I'm pretty sure she says something. She's like, "Fat, this is not a Jane Austen, whatever the fuck," or something like that. Yeah,
but something that's like very common in these like types of classics adaptations is to give it like everyone is a walking thesaurus. And in this movie, I think they do it well because they are like, it's so obviously a Shakespeare adaptation that when they're kind of like speaking in this really exaggerated way, like it is literally like Gilmore Girls level, which is it's fun. It's part of the ecosystem they're creating that makes it feel so surreal where everybody is like quoting literature and they literally like half of Kat's lines are her just like giving synonyms. Like literally so much of the dialogue is like provide literally one of the things they do is ask. Oh, sorry. I just kicked the cat in the face. God no, the first you. Thing that Alice and Janney does is she's looking for synonyms.
Synonyms for her smut book. Yeah.
For her smut, which we'll get to. I can't even begin. I just really like that. I think the way that they talk really adds to the atmosphere. And then I also liked the like weird cliques. Like there's cowboys and they eat out of like tins of beans.
The tins of beans, yeah.
The school, and the school is a castle in Washington State.
Why? Yeah, so that was another thing I wanted to point out. It's part of the room of requirement, but I do, since we brought it up now and we're kind of getting out of this section of the film and like the visuals and everything, not a single set was ever built for this movie. Everything was shot on location in Washington.
Where is that in Washington?
What I have no idea, but the majority of it is in Seattle.
What? It must be right outside of Seattle. Like government or university building. Like
it's probably a university if I had to guess. Like they, so like the way that they dress, it look, the school itself looks like a private school, but they don't act like it's a private school.
They don't, but it's like, that's why it's so surreal. And it's, it really feels a lot like,
but it would also explain their, yes.
Like they do that. And Sex Education is like for those who haven't seen it, it's set in the UK, but it's supposed to be like a very John Hughes-y type of high school. So it's like this high school that like not just the structure of it, but like the look of it and just everything about the way it operates is like would never in a billion years happen in Britain, and the campus and like the town they're in, it's just like does not exist. Like it's insane. And you're just supposed to suspend your disbelief. And this feels like that of like, yeah, sure, here we are. Like this does not feel real. And I have no idea where they must have filmed this.
I actually think the one thing that does lend to the realism regarding with the filming location is just the size, because this goes back to them not giving a shit that he's the new kid, because that is not a small school. They don't give a flying fuck that he's the new kid because it's a full size school.
Yeah.
A new kid shows up. Nobody notices. They're just like, oh, it's a new kid, whatever. And you just keep moving.
Yeah. Cause it's a gigantic high school with like billions of people in it or whatever. Like, yeah, there's definitely, I have no idea how many, but a lot of students at that school.
You even have like the moment where they throw the flyers after he changes the flyer for the MBA kids party to say
future MBAs.
Future MBAs, which I do want to call it. Well, I didn't get to mention this earlier, but during the music, the song that plays when it's slow-mo throwing the flyers down is Sexy Boy by Air, which that whole shot just looks so good.
And I think it's four floors.
It's when they're four doing that floors, too,
yeah.
Which is absolutely nuts. And dude, speaking of background characters, because I love the background characters in this movie. I just think they made them perfectly. Bogey Lowenstein, the way they shit on him.
Dude, the whole movie.
And dude, even the fact that they ruin his party is going back to one of the first lines at the beginning where he's like, they close the laptop and they're like, and on Michael, and they're like, wait, so you got kicked out, is what Cameron says, if I remember.
Hostile takeover.
Like, yeah, he's like, hostile takeover. Don't worry. I'll get him back for it.
I'll get mine.
And then he ruins the party. They don't even mention it, which I love, because so many movies now, I feel like,
you have to be dumb it
down and tell you. But no, in this movie, they don't say anything, but you literally see Michael getting his revenge. It's so good. It's so good. And that party scene is amazing. I remember being a kid being like, oh, this must be what all high school parties
were. Yeah. Yeah, dude. That's exactly what I thought with Bring It On, too. I was like, this must be what like going to high school is actually like. And then I got to high school. I was like, this isn't a no.
Dude,
I mean.
Not for me, it wasn't.
I'm like, I definitely threw those parties.
So for me, post high school, I went to Arizona State University, which has a reputation. They did lose their position.
Yeah.
But during the time was the biggest party school in the United States. And let me tell you, there were parties that matched this one.
Oh, for sure.
In insane ways. But I didn't experience that until way later, because in high school, I remember going to my first party and being like, what is this? Like, there was no music going on. Nobody took out giant full PA speakers.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Okay, well, that's a little bit. Like,
yeah. You also got to remember, too, the majority of these kids are wealthy as fuck, dude. Like,
I still think it's a private school. I really do think it's a private school.
It's a private school that just doesn't have a dress code. Like, it's just like, it's that progressive, I guess. Or
no, a lot of them don't. Mine didn't.
Oh, that's weird. I thought that was like a big thing about private schools.
Oh my god,
no. That's why when you sent me that thing a while back where you were like, oh my god, look at like the short dresses that you can wear to prom now. Like, how is this okay? Like, or you or Matt sent me that and I was like,
no. Oh, I remember that.
Okay, you were like, we would have been kicked out of our proms. Like, we would have been told to leave. And I was like, nah, people wear shit like that, like to class.
You went to a very different school than me then, dude, because I was allowed to wear different colors of polo that were approved, and as a boy I was only allowed to wear either khaki shorts or pants. Those were my options.
Hard pass.
I wish I
went to public school my whole life.
A lot easier. Okay, anyway, I'm putting us back on track. So the school is fucking crazy and awesome and I love it, and it's like its own little character and ecosystem within it. Are some of the greatest characters ever put to screen. And I've found this to be like another way that it like calls back, or that Mean Girls calls back to this. Like, Mean Girls takes a lot of tropes off of this, because like the staff in Mean Girls are like these guys, right? Yeah. They're all ridiculous. And I fucking live and breathe every moment of my life for Allison Janney's character in this movie. Like, she's sitting there writing a fucking smut book and everybody knows it. And she's like the guidance counselor, and she's just like, she calls Kat a heinous bitch and is just sitting back typing her porn. She is an icon and I live for
that
her.
That might actually be my favorite line in this whole movie. She's like, Kat, some people in school have begun to refer to you as tempestuous, a heinous bitch.
It's literally the line I wrote this down is heinous bitch is the term used most often.
Yeah.
So good.
When she's talking to Cameron, her energy, she like seems really nice and perky and fun because that's her name is Miss Perky. But the minute that the kids throw the fucking wad at the window, she's like, oh, so you're familiar with a bunch of like assholic shit wads out the window. And she flips all the kids outside off. I was like, holy shit.
Oh my God. She's a fucking legend.
Dude, yeah. I loved her so much. Her and Mr. Morgan are my favorite. The fucking teacher.
Mr. Morgan. No, I wrote it down wrong. Mr. Morgan is amazing. And I love the way that he gives absolutely everybody shit. Like,
equal opportunist asshole to them.
I love when he tells Joey, like, somebody's going to bitch slap you one day and
I'm not going to stop him.
And then, like, and Kat's like, thanks, Mr. Morgan. And he turns around and he's like, get out of my class. You're being such a bitch.
Because
like,
you're pissing me off.
Yeah. Like, he was an icon. And also just, like, to call out, like, Kat on her privilege was
iconic. It must have been so terrible for you to grow up in the middle America, middle suburb America.
That was, like, some genuinely woke shit ahead of its time. Like, that's, you know, where Trump's still trying to get people to understand that now. Like, I was like, damn, Mr. Morgan. Like, that's fucking right.
Well,
like,
so Matt will know this. So if he listens to this, it'll be another litmus test for Matt to, we'll find out if Matt listens, but
our favorite sub game to play. Will Matt listen? And if so, does he understand this joke? And will he text
where did he get this and how did he figure it out?
Never know.
When Patrick first comes into that class is right after Kat speaks up about the patriarchy and her annihilationism of the standard sets of the patriarchy shit. Patrick comes in and he goes, hey, sorry I'm late. What did I miss? And they're like, oh, just Kat's being a fucking bitch. And, you know, she hates the patriarchy. You know, nothing new. And he's like, oh, cool. And then he leaves again. He
literally turns straight around and fucks off.
I want you guys to know, when I was a senior in high school, I took astronomy. And for the first semester, for the first two semesters of astronomy, my teacher had broken his back in a bicycle incident over summer. So we had substitutes all the time. And there was a time where I walked into that class and saw we had a sub. And I was like, he was like, hey, are you in this class? I was like, oh, no, sorry. And I left. I literally just turned around and went home. And I think this is the movie that I got that from. I genuinely don't remember doing that, but I like pulling it from this. But seeing that, I was like, oh my God, that's where I fucking pulled that from.
We used to, when I was in high school, I was like, not the most popular kid in school, but did have my uses. And so everybody knew that like I could go on a rant if I needed to go on a rant. So sometimes in class, when everybody just like really could not be fucked to do whatever work it was, like before the teacher came in, they'd be like, Lindsay, can you start a fight about abortion or something? And I was like, you got it. Like they were like, I can't fucking handle this quiz. Like, can you start a fight? And we'll all yell at each other about politics for like the next 40 minutes, and then he'll let us out early because he'll be flustered and I'll be like, you bet, like, let's fucking go. And we would stage this in Spanish class.
I love that for you. Oh my God. I hated Spanish. I hated taking Spanish so much.
So then the other teachers that I wanted to draw attention to was the one in detention who confiscates both a quarter ounce of weed and a bag of Cheetos.
The bag of Cheetos.
And then proceeds to not react in any way, which is not okay, because to Kat flashing him in class and just sort of stares at her. And it's like, wait, you have a responsibility to not continue to stare at
her. He's also the soccer coach.
I was going
to
say, he's also the soccer coach who, funnily enough, had just gotten hit in the head with a golf ball the scene right before that.
And shot in the ass with an arrow. And
shot in the ass. That's what I was going to say when you brought that up earlier. I was like, this dude just gets hurt in the background all the fucking movie. Like, the whole movie.
He stole that weed then. Good for him. Like, I love how that was such an obvious, like, that was funny. That was
a good scene where he gets hit with the golf ball is so funny because they zoom back to Bogey.
Oh, Bogey, and he's just holding it.
Standing there with a smile on his face, and you see all the kids in the background are just gone.
They're running.
It's just him now. Dude, it's those callbacks in this movie, it's the little extra stuff that push this over the edge for me, the reason that I love it so much.
Yeah.
The little tiny extra things they do.
Yeah, it's the same reason why Andrew and Chris and I love Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. Is like, it's not so much what's happening in the foreground, it's the random shit in the background. Like, another good example is Futurama, where it's like owls and shit are like pigeons now.
Yeah, the owls in Futurama are so funny.
Dude, and so many times in Futurama, if they throw something off something, like they throw something off a building or they throw something off in the background, you'll hear it hit an owl.
Yeah.
Or they'll throw something and it's like, whoo, and an owl falls down in the background.
Futurama is one of the smartest shows, like comedies it was ever on, or at least animated. But anyway, we are so far off track. Let's talk about my reason for living, Cameron, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, my sweet baby angel. He is like 12 in this movie. He's so cute.
Yes.
He looks like he belongs in high school.
I do want to call back to what Andrew said earlier, and I do kind of feel like the only one that actually does look odd man out is both Joey Donner. He looks way too old to be in high school. I'm sorry, but he does.
I think that's the joke, though. I think not 100%, but I think it's supposed to be a little bit of a like a Grease joke with what's his name?
Not Kinnicky, but John Travolta.
Yeah, Travolta in Grease was a 40-year-old man. So, and he had a very sort of greaser thing. I even think that character's name is Danny. Wait, is it Danny?
No, his name's Joey Donner.
Joey.
Yeah.
And Danny in Grease. Regardless, I think it's a little bit intentional with him.
No, I would agree with that. The other person I think doesn't look like they belong there is, unfortunately, as great as he is, I don't think Heath Ledger looks the high school. I think Julia Stiles could totally pass. It's the way she dresses the way she acts.
More than others.
Yeah.
There's a few scenes where she looks really young, and she was really young. She was 18. So she's just hot. She was a teenager. And Heath Ledger, I don't care. There's absolutely nothing that you could, not that you're trying to, but just for the record, there is nothing that you or anyone could say to convince me that there's anything about his performance in this movie that isn't perfect.
No, literally in all caps in my notes, I have one line that just says Heath Ledger is so fucking suave.
No, he so is, dude.
It's
next level.
So many times in this movie that he's just fucking like the ultimate suave, just ladies man. He's fantastic.
Dude, even
so much charisma.
Even before that, I was talking to Lindsay about this right before you joined in, Andrew, but one of my favorite things that he does is so fucking redundant and superfluous. It's when they're first talking about him in chemistry or in biology, and he just flips the butterfly knife and stabs the tray, but he doesn't stab the frog. He stabs the tray to bring the tray closer to him so he can look at the frog. Like, why wouldn't you just use your fucking hands, dude? Like, why do you have to keep using this image of being a badass?
Dude, I heard he ate a live duck. Everything but the beak and the feet. Yeah,
it's so dude, and then that's the first fucking thing that Joey says to him when he walks up to him. He's like, "I had some good duck the other day," and Patrick's like, "What do you want?"
I'm reeling us in, you guys. I'm reeling us in. We're discussing supposedly in theory. We're talking about Cameron. In theory.
So,
I don't have a whole lot to say about.
I have a little bit. In the sense that I think JGL has a great performance, but I actually think he's one of the weaker performances in the movie, if I'm honest.
100% his performance is absolutely the weakest in the whole
film. I mean, I will always love JGL. I mean, he's incredibly charismatic. He's a fantastic dude. But I think he's – I just think compared to everybody else in this movie, he just doesn't hold up, like, in regards to
– I just don't care because it's him. But it's like, yeah, no, you're not wrong. It's a little bit like watching, like, Elijah Wood in The Faculty.
Like, yeah.
I love the movie The Faculty.
And then also Elijah Wood's there.
I'm so bad. I'm like, we need to keep on track. That I'm like, Elijah Wood.
You guys ever seen The Faculty? You know, he was also in Deep Impact.
Like, I do know that he was in Deep Impact. We never did that. We'll have to do it for next year's. We were on hiatus. Yeah, next year's Earth Day. The point is that, he's here and he's a sweetheart. And it's like, I did like their chemistry though. Like, when they're dancing at the prom, I liked it.
So I'm actually going to disagree here.
Yeah.
Because I think that JGL and I can't remember.
Larissa Olencik.
Alex Mack.
So Cameron and Bianca, I'll just say that.
Mm-hmm.
Their side of the love story is so much less built and realistic than Patrick and Kat. Like,
I like them at the dance, not before that.
Well, so okay,
before that, there's like nothing going on, and it's just sort of like the B plot, and it's not the. It's like Cameron chasing something that it's like, why do you even like her? Like, you don't even know her, and she's like not interested in him. But once they start dancing together, they're such cute.
Well, so this I'm gonna kind of flesh this out, and Andrew, tell me if this is kind of where your head was, because this was my only notice. I do think it's really funny that he is like pure of heart and he does just want to date her or whatever. He's not like trying to bang her or whatever, like Joey is. But he literally, when Michael asks him about her, like what it is, he can't say anything but her physical looks. It literally isn't until prom when they've had all these like interactions and he's been in her room and we get, I will say that there is the cute moment when they're going through Kat's room and he asks to see her room and she's like, no, girls' rooms are private. And I'm like, you're in your fucking sister's room, dude. Like,
can I also just say really quickly while we're there that like their two rooms are the most, like, if you weren't in a bedroom that looked exactly like either of theirs or both, like, you didn't live in the 90s.
Oh yeah, I know.
Like,
yeah,
I'm just absolutely saying, like, their bedrooms were so well done.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think by that time in the prom, they're cute. I think they're cute when they're dancing together, but agreed that it's like weak.
So they are very cute when they're dancing together, but the problem is that I had in it's not like a real issue because it's kind of like I don't want to say it's an issue because it's almost like a non thing because I don't care. It just doesn't feel fleshed out. Like, okay, they're cute, but like that's just, they appear there and they're cute. It's not like there's no real lead up to it in my mind. Whereas the actual development between Kat and Patrick just feels so much more natural. And I feel like their chemistry is just wild.
No, theirs is. Theirs is like, I was saying to Scott, this movie was a fucking bisexual nightmare.
Which
like,
is
like, I didn't know what to do with the two of them.
Which is really funny because, again, as I said earlier, Julia Stiles and JGL dated for part of this.
Yeah.
Not which is the so actual
weird.
Two. That blows my mind because of the level of chemistry. But I think that's Heath Ledger just having ungodly amounts of charisma.
Oh, yeah.
It might be. It might be just him being like fully off the scales. But let's talk about the sisters before we get all the way into my boy, who I loved so much in this. But I enjoyed their setup, which was very, very 90s to just grow up in the era of like your parents assume that everything is cocaine and orgies. And it's like the fear of teenage pregnancy is like so paramount.
Well, and it's like, even made it worse because like he's an obstetrician. So he's like,
right. But this was like very much, I don't know if it was like this for boys, but for girls, it was like all you ever heard about was like you were going to get pregnant.
I don't really think that type of conversation ever really happened with me. Like, even in my friend group, like,
you're going to get somebody knocked up.
No, it was more like my mom was like, you know, obviously don't do drugs and, you know, don't drink or whatever. But if you find yourself at a party, call me. I don't want you driving home or, you know, stuff like that or whatever. But like, I mean, I don't think it was ever like a big, like you kind of just said it, but like it never came up. It was not a thing we talked about.
That's crazy. No, my parents were like, drink, do drugs, but if you get pregnant, you're dead.
No, I can't really speak to this because I went to a, I don't know how to describe it, but an extremely, extremely, extremely Christian school. And it was very small. Like my graduating class was literally 23 people. So
mine had 200.
So like it was to the level where it's like there were kids who literally didn't understand how sex worked at like 16.
Oh, sweet baby Jesus.
It was like if you touch a boob, you are going to be beaten. So like not by the school, but like by your parents.
I wish I was getting laid as often as I was now when I was 16.
Like my mom wasn't like that, but there were kids who had parents like that. So like we just, and obviously there were kids having sex anyways, but like you would be, it kind of worked the opposite way. If the percentage of kids that got pregnant at my school in classes translated to public schools, there would be so many more teen pregnancies.
But also, that's bananas, dude. Yes.
Well, that's just because the kids literally didn't understand how it worked. Nobody was on birth control. Nobody was like.
I love that they put Alex Mack in the empathy suit, I think it was called, or the empathy belly.
I was fucking dying
laughing, like, put on the belly, like you're not going to get pregnant, you're not going to do drugs. And I was like, this is fucking amazing. Like,
well,
I wish that all the high school parties that I went to were, like, cocaine and orgies. Like, I'm like, come on. And then everybody goes to Bogey's party dressed, like, for prom.
No, so that was the other thing. Even, like, the way that everybody dresses in this movie fucking cracks me up because it is indicative of like their personalities where like everybody has their own style. And I really like that. It also felt more like high school to me than I think Clueless did because Clueless had the cliques that everyone dressed like wealthier, I guess.
Yeah. Clueless definitely had like the more of a money thing going for it. This was more like they did a nice job of representing like the two sides of the night. Like these 290 stereotypes of women, which is like in some ways fun because this is one of the movies that like kind of just it leans so hard into those stereotypes that it almost creates them in retrospect, you know what I mean? So it's like I don't hate it for it, but it is a really good example of when people talk about like there's only two kinds of women, this is kind of what they mean.
Yeah, Kat's style is incredibly Gwen Stefani.
Like it's also very so 90s, dead like- on like she is like Bianca looks less like kids in the 90s really dressed sometimes. She has some outfits that I definitely had.
I love that one of my other notes is I love that these fucking nerds don't know how to party. And this is like the direct line that I wrote that is when they're getting ready for the party, Cameron and Michael.
Oh, those two like, are so funny.
I was going to say, oh, is the tie a bit too much? And he's like, oh, you think? you don't wear that shit to a high school party. But of course, they have no idea. No, so they go to this party and like button downs and freaking stuff like that. Like just no like sense of and that's kind of the thing that I feel partly makes JGL feel that age is not just like how he looks, but his style. It feels like he hasn't found himself yet. It feels like he hasn't like developed a style yet. He doesn't know what he's doing. And then it's funny because at the end of the movie, like when they're going sailing or whatever, he actually looks like he has more of a style for himself. He's wearing a t-shirt. He's not looking like,
he's just a new confused. Kid at school. He's trying to find a way to fit in. And he's like friends with this total weirdo. And like, you got to think that like, if we're being real, like Joseph Gordon-Levitt wasn't unpopular in high school. Like, come on. Joseph Gordon-Levitt like met the wrong kid first as his like tour guide. Like all Joseph Gordon-Levitt needed was to like,
hold on, because when he skirts the truck in the parking lot and he goes flying down the hill.
Oh yeah, he stands up
and cheers, and everyone's cheering for him. Like this kid has some clout, man.
No. That's exactly what I'm saying. I completely disagree. I think Michael, and I normally hate this word, but is a giga Chad.
Oh, 100%, dude.
Dude, at the end of the movie, the level of suave this man pulls off by dropping off the dress and then coming out in his full outfit, swooning our Shakespeare fan.
Yeah.
Dude, He is like, you don't see it at the beginning, but then it slowly develops into him being this secret badass. He destroys Bogey Lowenstein, like we discussed.
Fucking wrecks this kid's night.
Dude, and then he finds his, and then he swoons his girl, like, in the way that is specifically tailored to her interests without sounding weird or awkward at all. He is not, like, when he approaches, that man is not nervous.
He there. He knows what's ready. Up. Yeah.
Like, dude, he is a nerd, but at the same time, secretly, oh, dude, he is a confident and badass dude. He's the one who develops all these plans. Well, they are bad in my mind.
Plans, but you're right. He is like, actually, you're really not wrong. Like, he like comports himself like a doofus, but nobody blinks an eye that they're at the party. Not that they well,
that's, what, that's the other thing is like no one cares.
Right. They're not like, yeah, you're right. Actually, it's like there's just not a lot of like bullying and meanness in this movie.
It all comes from Joey. Right? If it comes from anybody, it literally all comes from Joey.
Joey's a dick. Because
he draws a dick on his face while he's talking, which I got to tell you, I thought was really fucking funny. But
it's anarchy in this high school. Like, it so is. Like there are Keith no Ledger's adults smoking anywhere. Smoking in science class, like while they dissect frogs. Like, there is no law at this high school.
No, but even then, though, I feel like bullying, like if we're going to discuss that, Joey's bullying isn't unrealistic.
No, it totally isn't.
It's not like this cartoonishly evil bullying. It's like, no, that's kind of how it is. Mm-hmm. Like, he goes and sits down at his table. He's like, what are you doing here?
Like, it's changed a lot.
We're since, done now.
The early days, like when we were looking at movies and like the 80s and stuff.
Yeah,
like
you
the bullies are so mean. Like, people like bleed. So we're just like, I think relieved that Joey's like, Joey's fine. Like, he doesn't even register as a bully for me after everything we've seen.
No, I know. Considering like we had like things. Biff and fucking Biff from Back to the Future. And
yeah, but remember the Karate story Kid? And
the Karate Kid was full on like, I'm going to beat the, first of all, the Karate Kid was his fault. Okay. It was no, Danny's fault.
There was like a sexual assault in the Karate Kid.
There was a full on sexual assault in the Karate Kid. Like, there was also sexual assault in Back to the Future.
And Revenge of the Nerds.
And Revenge of the Nerds, but that's different. Oh, wait, we didn't cover that one.
Was it that I was thinking about? Anyway, the point is that I think Joey is kind of funny and a doofus and everyone kind of hates him. Like, I just like how nobody seems like everyone's very, they're just sort of real and raw with each other. Like, no one has any true animosity. Like, everybody, like, or feeling for people who aren't like their direct people, right? Like, nobody gives a shit when Joey gets hurt. He doesn't have like a posse. Nobody cares when he gets defeated. Everybody like, but they don't laugh horribly at him either.
Yeah, he's no one pokes fun. I think that's what it is.
It's not really, it doesn't really go either way. Everybody's just like, damn, like they make fun of Kat a little bit when she, but everybody's just kind of raw to everybody else. And that's just it. It's fine.
But it goes beyond that, though, because I feel like that's a theme for this movie. Because, like, we've talked about the PE teacher getting shot in the ass with an arrow like three times now. But he gets shot in the ass with an arrow and literally no one reacts. Everyone's just kind of staring at him like.
That's the same when he gets hit with the golf ball. The kid who's supposed to be catching the balls just runs off. No one's like checking on the coach.
No, Patrick whips out the butterfly knife. Like, no one looks. They're just that's Patrick.
The way they talk to each other in class. Like the way the teachers are in the English class that are just like, you pissed me off. Like, everybody's just so raw. So I really like that. But I think that the place where there's the most like plot, like payoff sort of like, I don't know, writing stuff happening. Cause a lot of this is just like quippy fun.
Yeah.
And chemistry, but where there's like character growth and arcs and all of those things is probably mostly with like the sisters being sisters again, like them finding their way to not hate each other is kind of like the main thing that happens in the movie, right?
I wish they explored it more about how Kat hates their mom for leaving and Bianca just, it's not so much that like Bianca doesn't care, but she's just kind of like with the pearls, she's like, why? It's not like mom's coming back to get them.
Yeah. Well, that's and she's mad that
for the younger kid to talk about that.
I actually really liked the way that they did it, though, because it was very like show don't tell. Like, we just know that there's this animosity there. And we know that like the dad is a sickle dad with two girls. And like, what the fuck does he know what to do? And like the mom left right when they started high school.
Yeah.
Right.
And dude, that's the thing about this movie is there is so much show don't tell.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's good. It's so really much good. Not
calling back. Like, again, at the very end of the movie, they go back to, oh, they're finally going sailing. This goes back to the first time Cameron tries to get Bianca to go out with her, and he's like, oh, do you want to go sailing? They call that back twice because he calls her out in the car and says, oh, you never really wanted to go sailing with me. And then at the very end, they finally go sailing. They never call that out. Like, I feel like in so many movies, they dumb that down where they have to show us.
Finally, we got to go on our boat trip. No, I totally agree. It's like, it trusts the audience and it's good. And it also, like, with that bit, I think speaks to, like, why he looks more comfortable in that last scene. Like, he's like the new kid, right? He's been settling in and now he gets to, like, go do a thing that he, like, presumably likes to do. They must own a boat, like, you know. So now he's like in his element a little bit more.
Before we go on to the stars of this movie, I do have one question that kind of was gnawing on me a little bit. And maybe I missed the scene where they explain this, but why are the freshmen allowed to go to prom?
Is she a freshman? I thought she was a sophomore and her sister's a junior. Yeah, they're sophomores. Also, anybody can go to prom if they get invited to prom.
Well, that's what I mean. If you were invited by a senior, well, so this is how it was in my school. Like, only seniors went. But if you were invited by an upperclassman, it didn't matter.
Sometimes the juniors go to prom. Like,
so
that's crazy.
But the older sister was a senior.
No, I know that. That's what I mean. But, like, why was – because they're both sophomores, so they shouldn't even be going to prom.
No, but I think – I mean, my school didn't put a limit on it. Everybody
actually, I'm just realizing Cameron doesn't ask Bianca. Joey does.
Yeah, and Joey's a senior.
Yeah, okay, never mind.
So
if I understood correctly, Joey, Kat, and Patrick are seniors.
Yes.
Michael and Cameron are juniors, and there's a reason that I say this. And Bianca and I cannot remember
Chastity. What
the union's characters, Chastity, are sophomores, because at the very beginning, Michael tells Cameron that she's a sophomore. He doesn't just say, oh, she's in our grade. He says, oh, she's a sophomore. Mm-hmm. And then obviously Michael and Cameron just go to prom. And she says they're in the house, oh, and Bianca says, I'm the only sophomore going to prom.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So all right. This is another show. Don't tell. I'm glad with that one. I'm okay with that. I just was confused because I thought they were the same age, but that's even better. I like that even more.
No, that actually makes a lot of sense. What I liked about this though was like, the rule is originally, for those who haven't seen this in a while, the girl's dad's rule is nobody dates until he's dead, basically. He's like, 18. Nobody's dating 18 forever, right? Mm-hmm. And then he says, okay, I'll amend it and I'll say, you know, Bianca can date when Kat dates. But these are very loose rules, right? So there's like one instance where like Kat goes to the party and then Bianca gets to go too, right? And that's why she goes to Bodie's party or whatever. And then the other one is prom. And she's like, she doesn't even talk to her dad about it. It's not like, hey, Kat's going to prom. Like, Kat just like walks out of the house, says she's going to prom, and he like thinks she's kidding. And then Bianca comes down and is like, well, I get to go because Kat went. And it's like, okay, so you don't even know that. Like, Kat could have just said that, walked out the door and gone back in the window. Like, it's like, what do you mean? Like, this isn't being monitored. And then in the end, when she goes out sailing, her dad doesn't know where the fuck she's going. She's just going on a date. And it's like, as far as they know, Kat had one prom date and a massive, massive public, like, domestic. And this means that, like, Bianca can have a boyfriend. I was a little bit like, the lesson here is do whatever you want and go out the window.
And he literally says that. He says, you should have gone out the window. Yeah. At one point, the dad literally tells her that.
Why are they asking for any of this at this point? Like, it doesn't seem like he's that much of a barrier. At the end of the day, they just do whatever the fuck they want.
The dad have known? If they were dating at school, how would the dad have known?
Like, well, maybe this goes back to what the dad says, because he does have kind of a nice scene where he tells Kat she can go to Sarah Lawrence, and maybe it goes back to what he says. He's like, look, there's only so long that you can be, you know, have an influence, and I still have one with Bianca and I haven't with you forever. And maybe that's what it is. Maybe he knows that He has no real power. That time.
Yeah.
He's not. Well, no, just that he, all he has is influence. Like, there's no real reason for them not to go do whatever the fuck they want. Or barrier. Yeah. He's not like watching them like a hawk. He's like, what the fuck are you sneaking out in the same room that I'm in for? Like,
I mean, I'll talk about Kat when we move on to that. But like,
well, no, Britt, lead us into it. That's fine. Go ahead. Because it is the next scene or the next section. So,
yeah.
Okay. So I think one of the things about Kat that makes her such a great character is she is very not high school in a way, in the sense that I feel like she's almost a fully realized person. And if you are listening to this and you're not in, and you're in high school, that may sound insulting, but I don't mean it that way. I just mean that Kat is so far beyond what a high schooler would be in terms of like
ready for the world.
Ready for the world. Yeah. In terms of who she is as a person, she's essentially accepted herself as a human being and is just doing her own thing, which is actually one of the reasons why I think she's such a good character, because when she has her breakdown, when she's reading her poem, dude, that shit hurts, because at no point up until this have you seen her break. At no point up until this, you've seen her get angry, but you have never seen her get like upset in terms of like emotionally upset, just angry, not like sad, not, you know, despite all the horrible shit that has happened to her, she's never gotten sad. And then even then, when she is angry, it's not comically angry like a high schooler would be. It's like, just fuck this shit. This is stupid.
Julia like, Stiles is so good.
She is such a great actress in this. Mm. The other, and I think that's why she's so good. And that's why that scene rings true with so many people, when she reads her poem and is like breaking down when she's doing it.
Dude, so that iconic.
Still hits me emotionally. I didn't think it would. And then I watched it and I was like, damn, I wasn't like choked up, but I was like, I felt it in my heart. I was like, dude, you are so good.
The point is, I heard that he lit a state trooper on fire. State is one of the funnier things I've heard in a while.
He sold his liver for what the fuck does he want to buy with it? Tickets, Stones tickets or something like that.
Should you? And again, another
should
callback.
You be drinking without a liver? Yeah. He's like, what? Nothing. Never mind.
I love when they play their little game of like, did this happen? No. Did that happen? No. And it's like, they really are like sort of the two sides of the same coin of like, of course they're great together. Like, how have these two not already been hanging out? It seems like logical for Julia Stiles to go after this guy. Like, he's amazing. I'm shocked. Oh, but he was gone. He was gone the whole prior year. Their whole junior year, he's gone. You're right.
The one thing I don't like when, because we're still kind of on Julia, I don't like that it took her so long to explain why she hates Joey to Bianca. Because if she was really, if she was really that worried about Bianca, that would have been the reason. I feel like she would have told her, this is why he's an asshole.
Yeah, so I have that in my notes that that's kind of fucked, that she didn't just like, you know, let her know. But I also have that in that same scene that Bianca's a fucking bitch.
She is a bitch.
When she finds out what happened to her sister, which is fucked, by the way.
Yeah, it is.
She like, is she, instead of empathizing, she's just like, get the fuck out of my room. And in a way, I think that's more realistic.
Because I agree.
High schoolers are pieces of shit.
No, they totally are. And it leans into Bianca being a princess and conceited. And the way that they explain her in the beginning of the movie, she does fulfill all of those. She checks those boxes. Mm-hmm. The problem is, I think, and we see it a little bit later, but Bianca does want this relationship with Kat, and she does want to have a stronger connection with her because the mom is gone and she looks to Kat to be the mom now, but she also wants to be her own person. And it's very typical high school stuff. Like, I want help, but I don't want help. And you know, whatever.
Like, I also think like they just had very different experiences of like coping with their mom leaving, and they have very different feelings about that and have like processed that very differently.
And that's so real, because literally, like, as a child of obviously divorced parents, being the older one, it's in a way, me and my brother reacted very similarly to them. I lashed out. I went and partied. I listened to heavy metal. I was angry. I did all the Kat stuff. And my brother was very, a lot more, I should say, well-mannered. He's very close to my mom, a lot more of a, you know, Bianca style relationship with her parents. So it's like, you know, now obviously it's way later. I'm in my 30s now. So me and my brother have our own relationship. But back then, that's how it worked out. So I just feel like everything in this movie played out so well. The only other thing I have to add with Kat that's like was a little like annoying thing to me is just at the very end, like the very, very, very end, the speed with which she forgives Patrick.
Yeah.
So I wanted to talk about this because this little plot line with him is like crazy. This is kind of a stand-in for all the abuse in the Shakespeare. Because otherwise this is like a pretty accurate adaptation. Like even the French lessons are canon, right? But
do you speak French? No, but I'll learn.
I love that he's like, I learned French for you. And she's like, you did not. Like,
yeah, you have no fucking clue what you're talking about.
But it's crazy that at the end of all this, she gets no explanation. It's just like an I like you, I swear, and I bought you a guitar. And it's like weirdly accurate to the Shakespeare because there's like a lot. There's a big role that like dowries play in the play, mostly for Bianca. But it's strange. It's not a lot of explanation or apology.
It honestly, like watching that was very hard for me to be like, why is that all you're saying? Cause.
So I think the, like my headcanon at least is that I think the thing that is implied is that he spent all the money
for the guitar. Yeah.
On the guitar.
We know he did. He says that.
No, that's absolutely what he did. And which I think is funny because I think like in an alternate universe, they already are in like a secret relationship together because they obviously belong together. They're iconic. And they get approached to do this. And he's like, babe, do you want to make $300?
Oh my God.
Like that is like, that's my headcanon. That's my like all like my AU fan fiction on this is that's what they do and they make a bunch of money and they like keep upping the cost and are just like fucking Joey over.
So that was okay. That was the one thing that I didn't really understand. They say Joey's a model and I get that, but like why after like maybe two attempts to ask Kat out, does he raise his price? And now it's not $100 just to, or it's not $50 just to do it the one time. Now it's $100 every single time they go out.
Because Kat's being kind of a bitch and Heath Ledger doesn't actually care about her until a little later on. Yeah. She's being kind of a bitch. I guess. She does learn like to chill a little bit. And I think it's like,
well, yeah, when she gets drunk, she's the chillest she's been in that whole movie. But like,
no, but I mean, I think it's underexplored that like her anger, it's not supposed to be that like it's fine. Like she obviously is really angry about her mom, right? Like it's a, like she is by nature snarky, but it's like over the top because of her mom and she's like softening, right? So, and then find somebody who's like also kind of soft deep down, but has like this bad boy persona and they like are perfect together.
Yeah. I mean,
but she is being a bitch. Like she is.
No, she totally is. And I get that.
He is like not into it. He's like, who is this? Like, I can't even deal with this. She's being so nasty to me. And I'm beautiful. Look at me. Why doesn't she want me? And I'm like, I get it. If I was.
Oh my God. That was another one of my favorite parts.
21, I would be like shocked to my core that somebody didn't want me either. I would have thought that was the easiest assignment ever.
Dude,
but I think that's part of the draw for him, though.
Well, no, I know. And that's definitely the game for him is like he wants to keep, because he could have just told Joey like, no, fuck off. This is impossible. I don't. She's being a bitch. Bye.
Yeah.
But does up his price. But what I do think is really funny is what you just said is when they're in the bar and he's like, dude, OK, so she doesn't like smokers, but also Kat's kind of into like pretty guys and like the whole bar looks at them. And it's dead quiet. And then Heath Ledger just goes, are you trying to say I'm not pretty? They're like, no. Like, you're totally pretty. Like, you're great, man. Like, you're literally.
For the record, I'm like, Heath, have you seen your silky smooth curls and your dimples? You were the prettiest. What the fuck are you talking about? Like, he's so pretty.
This is still the 90s, by the way. So I do think it's wild that he's just in this biker bar drinking beer where the legal age has been raised already.
I would totally accept a moment in this movie wherein he gets carded and just says no to the bouncer. Yeah, and everyone just like,
no, I'm coming in.
And it's fine. I would have taken that. Because, yeah, I'm like, what the fuck is this? But it was a very common trope in the 90s.
I was going to say, he is Australian. Yeah,
first of all, he's Australian. And he's Heath Ledger. Would you tell him no for anything? Like,
even Allison Janney hits on him when he's talking about how he showed the lunch lady his bratwurst. And she's like, little overconfident, aren't we?
Oh, no.
He's like, what the fuck? I literally
have the line written down. It's like, what? It's that the way that she talks to him is so fucking great. And he's like, aren't we the optimist? Is what she hits.
Aren't we the optimist? Yeah.
So good, dude.
Should I turn the lights down? And she's like, you're flattering me, but.
He's perfect.
The only other issue I really have is, like I said, at the very end, the lack of like closure. I think if they had added another 2 minutes to this movie where they just have a brief like conversation or something to like get over the fact, because you've been saying that Heath Ledger is a great dude, but no, he kind of isn't, because he didn't come clean.
Yeah, he didn't really explain anything. He just lets her leave.
No, even
when he buys her the guitar, he's like, but I got paid to take a girl out, but I fell for her. And she's like, I totally accept that explanation.
No, like, I think that's what Andrew's saying is like, there's no real like meat to the conclusion. It's just kind of like, yeah, here we are.
Like an extra, not even 60 seconds of him just being like, look, I'm sorry.
Yeah. I think it's the apology is like, that's like, weird.
I'm sorry. Like, I should not like this. That is what I did. And it was fucked up. And like, you know, that's it.
I believe there is no apology. I think that's a pretty fair point.
It ultimately doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Because the movie is so good that so like, perfect. I don't care. Like, could that have been added? Sure. Would I've liked an apology? Sure. Do I care? No, not at all.
See, but here's the real question, Andrew. How many movies do you know that you enjoy that you can say that's a flaw I acknowledge, but I don't care? How many other movies can you think of that are like that? Because not I can many. Think of one off the top of my head is Moonrise Kingdom. I do not need the beach dance scene in Moonrise Kingdom, but that movie is still flawless otherwise.
And that's the thing is like, there are, but dude, you can't bring Wes Anderson.
I know it's a whole different ball game.
Is like my dude. I have a shrine to him.
We'll have our moment. Don't worry, dude. I'm saying we'll have our time.
I love that man with all my heart and soul. Grand Budapest is, I think, a cinematic masterpiece. It really is an institution. but no, like that's the thing. That's the overwhelming like power of this movie is that it gets you in the feels just enough. It's funny as fuck. The dialogue is so good. It's got that just enough of that West Wing quippiness to be like flames. It's got just enough of the like obviously overblown dialect where no high schooler talks with that level of just prose.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen. But I don't care because it makes the movie better. Like everything about this movie just adds up and stacks on top of each other so that when it ends, a small thing like that is something you're not even going to notice. Like I didn't notice that until like I watched it so many times.
Yeah. It's because like I didn't care.
Like I just didn't care.
I agree. I fucking love this movie.
Yeah.
Scott, take us through the rumor requirement because this podcast is now longer than the movie.
It's true. Don't worry. I'll cut it down. So there are a lot of really amazing things in here. I'll save this first one for last because it legitimately made me spit water all over my computer.
Yeah, I would like to spend a moment on. Yeah. Otherwise, go ahead. I do have a quick qualm.
So, well, yeah. So Heath Ledger improvised both the knife scene where he uses the butterfly knife to pull the frog closer, and when he's seen playing with the fire shortly after he lights the cigarette and his friend puts it out.
And which was my favorite moment. That was where I laughed the hardest.
I do really enjoy that. And it was it's kind of obvious that it wasn't scripted because it goes back to him doing it real quick. It's not like part of that same scene. But another thing that I did want to point out is that Heath Ledger beat out both Ashton Kutcher and Josh Hartnett for this role, which I think is another situation where we were talking about this on Matrix last week, where I don't think the movie would be the same without the people who are in it now.
No.
So Ashton Kutcher totally. In this, we're going to get Ashton Kutcher in Dude, Where's My Car shortly after this.
I loved that movie when it came out. So oh my I. God. Oh my God. My friends and I were obsessed with that
movie. He just doesn't have the charisma.
He doesn't. I truly do not think he could have pulled that off. So Karen McCullough, who was one of the writers, revealed that the name of the movie came from a personal diary entry when she was in high school, which I fucking loved. One of the things that's really cute, a little bit of a callback. It happens right after each other, though. So this is a little bit kind of what Andrew's been going on for this whole episode. But Patrick walks out of the music store selling vintage Fenders and immediately comments on Kat's vintage Fenders for her 64 Dodge Dart. And Cameron's name, which I thought was really funny because we just spent like a whole fucking big thing talking about, and we love talking about James Cameron, but Cameron's actual name,
the greatest pioneer,
Cameron's full name is Cameron James, which is literally just they named him after James Cameron. That's literally it. That's fucking it. And then the Amazing. Last thing I do want to point out, because I did play guitar in high school and I did think that this was very fucking funny, as far as like what they show, the guitar that Kat plays when they go into the store is a common Squire Stratocaster. It is the beginner guitar. It is the guitar that everybody plays on. It was made famous by Blink-182 because it was the guitar they used the most. They were very easily made. You could destroy them and you could just go pick up another one at fucking Walmart. At the time, the average cost of a Squire was anywhere from $125 to $350, and that's what he ends up spending on that guitar. However, right next to the Strat is what's called a mid-range Fender Strat, which is the same guitar that Wayne buys in Wayne's World, which in that movie was $2,000. In this, it's $1,300. I just thought it was really funny that you have this common everyday guitar right the fuck next to arguably the one of the Mona Lisas of the 90s guitars. Like, it's not a Gibson or it's not like a Les Paul or an Ibanez, but it's still like fucking up there. I just thought that was really funny that we're going to point that out, or like that no one fucking comments on this ever.
I like when you're a nerd about like unexpected nerd shit.
You're welcome.
If we're going to talk about guitar nerd stuff, shout out to Tosin Abasi and Abasi Concepts.
Fuck yeah.
8-string guitars. Hell yeah. Heavy metal.
But I will let Lindsay take us out of the room in requirement with this fun fact about something she is very passionate about.
Oh yeah. Well, or at least I was like, what the fuck? I just wanted to state that this is not how those like paddle boat things work. Like, they have a scene where they, like, they cut school and they go, like, you know where the paddle boats where you, like, turn it with your legs? Yeah, like a swan boat. They're doing this, like, in the fucking Seattle Sound, which is, like, a little bit insane. But, you know, they don't, like, appear to be near the shore, for one thing. But, like, it's some really incredible green screen. Like, actually, it, like, kind of holds up. But so they're in this paddle boat on a green screen. And, like, the way that those things work is, like, if you were to be alone in one, for instance, it'd be fine. Like, the crank moves as it moves. There's only one crank. You don't each have a separate, like, set of pedals. Like, how would that work? Like, you're pushing the same thing together. And Heath Ledger is, like, running on this bike like he missed leg day. And like, Julia Stiles is, like, pedaling like a normal person. And every now and then you can see the director, like, try to get them in sync. And, like, Heath Ledger will, like, slow down and, like, be normal for a minute. And they'll be in sync for a second. And it's like, I don't need you to be perfectly in sync, but, like, be calm down. Like, blend in.
Figure this out.
He picks it up again and I'm like, damn, like Patrick Verona, you fucking idiot.
He's so excited. Yeah, he's so excited. He's gotta be somewhere. He's gotta get to the next scene away from that
group. How much that did not
add up.
Like, that math doesn't math. Yeah, I was like, what the fuck am I watching? Like, how is this the cut they used? Like, they couldn't get him under control or just like buy a fucking piece of set that like did have the same, like, why is this thing they built on the set not like just a swan boat that they're pedaling? You know what I mean? Like, why are the mechanics of it so different that they And I understand the reason is money, but I, you know, still. So the point is, I gave this movie a 10 out of 10. Fight me.
I can't. I'm sorry. I love you both, but I have to give this like an 8, 9 out of 10. An 8.9 out of 10.
Fair enough.
I'm sorry. I'll give it a 9.2 because of the adults. I'll give it a 9.2 because
9.2 for Allison Janney.
For Allison Janney gives you that 0.3.
God, she's an icon.
But hit
you
me
know
with
what
it,
she's
Andrew.
Really good in is I, Tonya. Anyway, yeah, yeah.
She
sorry,
is really
Andrew,
good in I, Tonya. She's also really good in Juno, for those of you who don't remember, she's in that.
God, she's in everything. She's amazing. Okay, go ahead, so, Andrew. What'd you give it?
I am going to give it a 9.5. I absolutely love this movie. I think it's iconic. I literally talked to my mom about this before this. And my mom remembered lines from this movie.
Fuck yeah, dude.
Like, and my mom does not give a fuck about anything pop culture, and she still remembered lines from this movie.
Oh, yeah.
I think if you grew up on this, you will never forget it. I think if you grew up in this period and you have not watched this, you have to watch it.
I agree.
Like, it is just so good. And in terms of teen like comedies that actually have some heart, that aren't pure comedies, I think this is the best. I don't think you get better than this, in my opinion.
I agree.
Yeah, I would. I think that's, I would agree with that.
I think it's, I don't think you can beat it. The only reason I'm not giving it a 10 out of 10 is the only movies I will give a 10 out of 10 are
like Rogue One and shit that
Rogue One's really good. I give them flippantly.
She does kind of hand them out. Like, yeah.
This is fucking great. 10 out of 10. I don't even want
to. It's harder for us to hand out a 9 than a 10.
Yeah, it is. It is. 9 point something is a loftier statement than a 10.
No, like if you guys have heard some of my other ones, like especially like Top Gun, I'm pretty brutal on a lot of movies. Like, but sometimes I can't, man. This is so good. It's the only reason I'm not giving it a 10 out of 10, like I was saying, is I only give the movies that I think are like game changers or are in my personal top three, like 10 out of 10.
That's fair. I'll give you that.
I mean, everyone's entitled to their opinion.
There's no villain in this. I'm not even going to talk about Joey. He gets his
Joey
at the end.
I gave Joey a 10 out of 10. I'm just glad that we're out of the 80s. 10 out of 10.
Yeah, no more
take
bullying.
Us out of here, Scott.
I will happily take us out of here. Andrew, thank you as always for being here. If you want to do me a favor, where can everybody find you?
So I am currently in a forest just east of this nice little town. It's called Burkittsville. It's in Maryland. Met a nice woman, but she keeps asking me to stand in a corner. So I'm not sure if it's a kink or whatever, but I'll be getting out of here. It's a bit weird, so I'm going to pack up. I'll be somewhere else next time.
Now we really do need to figure out what the fuck we're doing for Halloween, you son of a bitch. but yeah, Jesus Christ, dude. I wasn't ready for that.
Oh, my God.
God damn it. Okay. Whew. All right. As always, thank you all so much for joining us today. We hope you enjoyed yourselves and probably learned something. Because God damn it, dude. We're in the last two. Every movie in the 90s is going to be long as fuck. Speaking of long as fuck, you guys better believe the next movie coming up, is a little indie film called Star Wars Episode One, The Phantom Menace. Lindsay has some fun things going on that weekend, so it will be Andrew, Chris, and I. Yeah, weren't we going to talk about this?
I don't know. What weekend? Next weekend?
Yeah.
Oh, I do have some stuff. I'm like, you got this.
No, that's fine.
Like, I already figured you like would have me sit this one out for numbers of people alone. So that you guys can fucking be nerdy about this together. Go ahead. The one that I really like is the next one. I like the second one all the politics.
Attack of the Clones. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, I like Attack of the Clones because it's all very political. There's a lot of, you know,
true, it is.
And stuff. So anyway, the point is, yeah, Star Wars, more Star Wars next week. And without me to try to keep those nerds in line.
Yeah, this is going to be an off the rails episode, dude. Holy shit.
It's probably going to be so fucking unhinged. I can't wait to listen to it. I actually am like, yeah, no, for sure. I'm not coming on. Like, I'm just going to like see what happens. Be an agent of chaos.
I will. I'll do everything I can. but yeah, join us next week for episode one, The Phantom Menace, with me, Chris, and Andrew. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, as well as follow us on all of our social media. You can find the links to our sites and social media in the episode descriptions. If you'd like to support the podcast, we'd love you forever, but we do encourage you to follow us on Patreon, where you can find the show notes for each of these episodes. Make sure to check out the website as well for all of our timeline goodies, including Request the Timeline. Let us know what you want to see, and we'll make it happen. I did just just get one from Matt. So I will be either doing a solo episode with Matt, or it'll be at a Patreon exclusive for Small Soldiers. But otherwise, until next time, guys, stay nerdy.